Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Mass deportation was a major focus of Donald Trump's campaign for president, and it propelled him back into the Oval Office. Since Election Day, it's been reported that Trump has decided to appoint South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem to serve as Homeland Security Secretary, and Tom Homan will serve as Trump's border czar. He previously served Trump as the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, during the previous administration. These possible appointments signal that Trump is serious about keeping his promise of mass deportations of millions and millions of people. Organizations like the Immigrant Legal Resource Center are preparing to oppose the mass deportations. Priscilla Olivares is the senior policy attorney and strategist for the Immigration Legal Resource Center. And Priscilla Olivares, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much, David, for having me.
So, y'all put out a statement saying that y'all are determined to fight Trump's policies, hateful policies, is what you put in the statement. So with Trump having control of the House and the Senate and having the votes on the Supreme Court pretty much, how much leverage is there to fight?
There is still leverage to fight, David. I know all the updates that we're hearing, of course, are very concerning, but Trump will face obstacles and he will face legal challenges. There is a strong coalition of advocates in Texas, and that includes our organization, the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, and other nonprofits throughout the state, throughout the country, who are ready to educate communities about their rights and protect our communities against immigration enforcement.
So, what can we do for communities? I mean, I imagine there are probably some folks out there who are really scared right now. Have you heard that? What can be done to help those people? What do they need to know?
First, I think it's really important to emphasize that on an individual level, one of the best ways to stop yourself from being subject to immigration enforcement. And in Texas, as you know, David, we have our state immigration enforcement scheme, Operation Lone Star. It's important to remember that individuals still have rights as a community member. All individuals in the U.S., regardless of their immigration status, have certain rights and protections under our Constitution. And it's important for people to assert their rights to defend themselves in situations such as when they're at home and an ICE agent comes to their house. So it's important to remember that you have the right to remain silent and can refuse to speak to an ICE agent. You also have a right to demand a warrant before letting law enforcement into your home. You have the right to speak to a lawyer and make a phone call if you are detained. So there's a lot of rights that individuals have regardless of their status, and it's important to be equipped with those rights.
The immigrant community that we have in San Antonio, in Texas, across the United States, tend to be productive, very essential workers, generally, as we used to call that term during the pandemic. They're still essential workers. How is by raising the awareness that the loss of these people would be devastating to the economy. And we're talking about it would take 2-3 points away from our gross national product. It would sink us into a recession. Are we dealing with an information problem, letting the people who have the power, who can make these rules and make these calls, trying to convince them that they are working against the best interest of the national economy, which seems to be the main thing that people were focused on when they voted for Trump?
Yes, I think it's really important to remember that immigrants are part of our communities. They, as you mentioned, contribute significantly in many ways. And one of those ways is through our economy. Texas is a strong economy because of immigrants. Our communities are beautiful and diverse because of immigrants. And I think if Trump follows through with his mass deportations, it is going to be a rude awakening for many community members who took for granted all of the beauty, all of the wealth, and all these different ways that community members provide to our state and to our country.
So in September, a poll showed that 54% of Americans supported mass deportation, including 25% of Democrats. What do you think was the appeal for mass deportation? What do they think they're talking about when they say they want mass deportation? Of course, and they're talking about Trump has talked about 10 million, then he says 20 million. Sometimes he said 30 million undocumented people in the United States that he wanted removed.
I think it depends on which community members you talk to. I do think there is a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding of what a deportation entails. I think people forget that every day in our country, people are being deported. And these are people that have significant ties to our communities, who are contributing to our communities in many different ways. And you highlighted the economy. That is one of the many different ways that they're contributing. They're teachers, they're lawyers, they're doctors. These are the people that would be affected by Trump's mass deportations. I think there is a lot of misinformation that Trump is going to target criminals, but that's not the case. If we look at what is happening in our country today, what has happened in the past, we see that many of our community members who are contributing to our society, who are making our societies and communities beautiful, they unfortunately will be the ones who will be subject to these mass deportations.
Right. Tom Homan, who has been named to be the border czar, he was quoted saying that they will be going to workplaces and rounding up workers who cannot prove that they are U.S. citizens, that they have reason, legal reason to be reside in the United States. So he is publicly saying that it's not going to be targeting of violent criminals, which was Biden's policy right now. They're definitely moving beyond that into, a more aggressive posture for removal of workers, even at a time when the economy needs those workers and employment is already very tight. And
That's
so
correct.
it seems like how what and you gave that advice that people should have their rights and they have the process, but if Trump is going to invoke the Enemy Aliens Act, is that going to and declare a national emergency? I don't want to spin out of control here and hyperventilate about what he can do and what he might do, but these are the things that he said that he will do. He definitely ran on saying that he would call on this Enemy Aliens Act to give him broad powers. So if he, even though we're not actually at war right now, he says he can do this. So, I mean, how are you preparing to try to stymie that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, and I think it's important to just kind of give background on what the Alien Enemies Act is. So Trump has vowed, as you said, to use the Alien Enemies Act to detain and deport migrants. What this act does is it allows a president to detain, relocate, or deport non-citizens from a country that's considered an enemy of the United States during wartime. And if Trump follows through on his commitment to use this act, what it could do is suspend due process and implement mass deportations. And to your point, David, I think it's important, right, that we're aware of these threats, that we take Trump seriously on these threats. But here too, I anticipate that if the Alien Enemies Act is invoked, there will be legal challenges, just as there were in the previous by previous Trump administration. There will be continued challenges, and there are nonprofits ready to make those challenges to protect community members.
So it doesn't do us any good to, hyperventilate about all the things that Trump could do because we did that leading up into the election, and apparently, it sounded so fantastic that people didn't really pay attention to it. It didn't sound like, oh, he's not going to be a dictator. He's not going to do these things. I think everything's going to be all right. It's just another president, and we've survived him before. We'll survive him again. But do you think that things are going to be different this go around?
It's of course hard to say, but I think if we think about what Trump has done in the past, We also see that, Trump's first term showed just how cruel he can be. And he surrounded himself, as you've mentioned, by some of his recent appointments with people who believe in mass deportation. It's also important for listeners to know that there are already these expansive state and federal enforcement schemes. And I think Trump will build off of those schemes and to deport individuals en masse. Even here in Texas, I know, David, you've done a lot of great reporting about Operation Lone Star. So in Texas, we have a state deportation machine, OLS, or Operation Lone Star, which uses state law enforcement, state National Guard, and state resources to target and arrest immigrants. And I think Trump will likely build and expand on not only the federal deportation scheme that we have in our country, but also expand the state enforcement model that was created by Governor Abbott under Operation Lone Star.
And they are talking about using local sheriffs and changing the law so that they would deport anyone who's arrested for any reason who has immigration issues, like even for a traffic violation, that they would be deported. And our local sheriff has been opposed to that, but would they pass a law where he has to go along with that?
And that's a great question, David. I think, we're entering into our legislative session early this year. I know bills are already being filed, and it remains to be seen what harmful bills will try to be worked through our legislative session. I think, as you mentioned, Trump could build off of what's already in place by increasing, for example, expedited removal, which is a fast removal process where an individual doesn't have a right to hearing. Again, deploying National Guard to immigration, to do immigration enforcement, setting up checkpoints. These are all things that are within Trump's power to do.
All right, we're going to take a break here, continue our conversation with Priscilla Olivares with the Immigrant Legal Resource Center about what could be happening, what we hear could be happening under Donald Trump's mass deportation. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're trying to bring into focus what a Trump mass deportation could look like. We're trying to make this fact-based. It's hard because, Trump's not in office yet. All we can really do is base this on what he promised to do and who he's talking. He's appointing people now. They're not fully appointed, but he said publicly who he's appointing. So we can work with that to try and figure out what this means for San Antonio. San Antonio has been at the center of immigration debates going back over 100 years. And here we are again. This will impact San Antonio. If mass deportations are put into place, we can see the industries that will be impacted will be construction and agriculture. That means food prices, housing prices will go up. Hospitality will lose workers. Also, that's tourism. That's part of San Antonio, the restaurant industry. This will also heavily impact childcare and also, a lot of people who work in the medical industry as well. So, are we ready for that? Is this what people wanted when they were holding up those signs and chanting mass deportation now? If we're able to, avoid a mistake, find just the people who shouldn't be here and get them removed, I think that people would be very that would be good. But, are we going to break up families and people who have been working really hard and never did anything to anyone other than try to earn an honest dollar? Well, then that's another conversation. We're speaking with Priscilla Olivares. She is the senior policy attorney and strategist at the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. Let's go to a caller. And Edward, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, folks. Wanted to make maybe 2 points, but one that's not directly related, but strongly tangentially related to the topic of mass deportation. I wanted to state kind of for the record, and see how this affects the conversation, that a significant amount, if not most, of the last 4 years' mass migrant entry to the United States were granted asylum erroneously or even illegally. Economic migration is not a grounds for offering asylum. We are a nation of laws. If the present administration granted asylum to hundreds of thousands, if not millions and millions of people for economic migration, they broke the law. Full stop. That's my comment.
All right. Well, I appreciate your comment, Edward. And there's a lot of truth to what you say, but also there's some nuance I think that needs to be pointed out. So Priscilla Olivares, your response.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think that's another example of a lot of misinformation. So, you know, we talk about following the law, as this caller said. There is, under our immigration laws, the right to seek asylum. That is within our laws. So when individuals come to our country, come to our border, and are asking for asylum, they're actually following the law. So that's within their law to do. I also want to highlight that right now, even under the Biden administration, there is really no meaningful access to asylum. And that is because Biden issued a rule this past summer that prevented many individuals from even having the opportunity to seek asylum. And so I think it's really important to say clearly that it is very difficult to seek asylum, but seeking asylum within our country is a right under our immigration laws.
But the asylum system that we have was not designed for thousands of people showing up in a single day at the border. It was supposed to be something that was rarely applied. And attempts to fix the asylum system seem to be going nowhere in Washington, D.C. because of the political radioactiveness of the issue.
Well, I would say, David, that I don't think there were actually meaningful attempts to repair the asylum system. Yes, there are things that we should be doing as officials, as leaders in our country, to really address the need and response to people that are seeking safety in our country. But that hasn't been done in a meaningful way for some time. And that's why you see individuals that seem to be, seeking asylum in these ways that can seem chaotic, but really we can process people in a humane way and ensure they have access to apply for asylum and allow these individuals to work through our court system. All right. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened.
Let's go to, here's our number, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Want to hear from folks about what you're expecting with mass deportation. If you think that this is just a bunch of hot air, swamp gas coming from Trump for the votes, and you don't think it's going to actually go into effect, well, let me hear that. I'd like to know if that's what people are really thinking or not. Let's go to Jonathan. And Jonathan, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, David. As a San Antonian, it's my belief that people seeking asylum by not going through the process, it's already establishing a lack of disrespect towards their country that they want to be a part of. And so if you get off on that foot where you're coming into this country and you're completely disregarding everyone else who waits in the line, so to say, and does their process, It's disrespecting those people. It's disrespecting Americans because, I mean, there's a process.
All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you for the call and for that point. Priscilla Olivares, get in line. There is a process. I don't know if there actually is a process.
That's a great question. And there isn't a meaningful process that allows people to have access. So I'll just cite one example. So there is a CBP-1 app that individuals, asylum seekers, have to access if they want to seek asylum before they enter the United States. So whether a person is able to seek asylum is based on whether or not they have a cell phone, whether or not they have Wi-Fi service, and they're placed in dangerous conditions in Mexico waiting to see if they can access this CBP-1 app. That's just one example of where our asylum system is now, that individuals seeking safety who are fearful have to be able to access a phone app in order to try and attempt to enter the United States and seek asylum. I have spent many years before I was in my current role representing asylum seekers. These were brave individuals, activists in their communities, doctors, lawyers, teachers. They didn't choose to leave their country. They were forced to leave their country. And I think it's really important for us. The last caller, Jonathan, talked about respect. We need to respect our laws. That's all that advocates are asking. Respect our nation's laws and allow people to access the asylum system.
I want to ask you about this birthright citizenship issue. This is something that Donald Trump has said on the campaign trail that he wanted to get rid of. Birthright citizenship has long been understood to be required under the Constitution's 14th Amendment, which states all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. And people have been seeing that under the law and in the courts that if you're born in the United States, you become a citizen. Well, they're starting to challenge that. James Ho, who is on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, conservative lawyer, he has the argument saying that if your parents are undocumented, then you are not under the jurisdiction thereof because they were criminals. They were here undocumented. And so he says, then therefore you do not deserve birthright citizenship. I mean, they're printing together this argument to challenge that question. Should we be concerned? Do you take this seriously, or is this just fringe stuff, Priscilla?
I think we should take all of these comments, this anti-immigrant rhetoric, seriously. Yes, definitely. I think we need to be, again, equipped with accurate information, and we need to be reminded of what our rights are. And as you point to, under our Constitution, under the 14th Amendment, we have a right to birthright citizenship, which means all individuals born in our country are United States citizens. But again, we need to take these claims, these comments seriously, and we need to respond with facts and with truth to really inform our community members, because I think there's unfortunately a lot of misinformation. And I think that was even highlighted with some of the questions that we received from callers today. But there needs to be more engagement with people, because I do think people, if they understood what was accurate, they would have a different perspective about our nation and what's going on specifically in relation to immigration.
Okay, and so the heart of the questions we got were basically these people were in the country. Maybe they applied for asylum, but the callers, who I think they represent a lot of what people thinking, is that they don't really think, they think that asylum is somehow kind of cheating and it's not really becoming in part of the country and they shouldn't be doing that and therefore they should be expelled. And so we're going beyond the 13 million people that Donald Trump has been originally talking about, people who are undocumented. Now we're getting into the 20 millions of people who would be expelled under the country. And that would be, and where would they go? And what would happen to them? And they, we can't, those are questions that have a lot of implications that need answers, Priscilla.
Definitely. I think there are a lot of questions. There's a lot of concern. There's a lot of fear in our communities. And I think our officials, our leaders, should be responsible to
questions. Have, you know, where do you put millions of people from Venezuela? You know, they won't take them back in Venezuela. Are we going to put them in camps in South Texas? Are we going to ship them into Mexico? Mexico doesn't want them. What happens to these people?
Those are really great questions, but I think those questions should be asked to the leaders who supported these policies. Those are questions that need to be asked. And even the cost, the financial cost, but also the emotional toll. What happens when somebody is deported and torn away from their community and family members? Irreparable harm will be done to our communities.
Well, I'm really focused on the economy, because that's what people seem to be most interested in. And that's what they voted for, a strong economy. And this is going to weaken the economy, not by a little, but by a lot. Priscilla Olivares is the Senior Policy Attorney and Strategist for the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. Thank you so much for coming on the air today and talking to us.
Thank you so much, David.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.